Okay. Bible prophecy reveals events that will soon shake this world and change the lives of millions upon this earth. The Bible is the Word of God, containing history, prophecy, and also the knowledge from Almighty God on His purpose and plan for mankind, all the way from the foundation of the earth, the beginning of history, all the way through to the kingdom of God, when Jesus Christ returns to this earth and sets up the kingdom of God. But before Jesus Christ returns, a major world-shaking event will take place, foretold in Bible prophecy in the symbolic language of a wild beast, described in the book of Revelation and also in the book of Daniel. In biblical prophetic language, this beast will be a new world superpower that will dominate the earth. This will be a group of nations that will give their power to a European-based superpower and a dictator who is also symbolically called the beast. One specific nation will dominate this coming European superpower, led by the descendants of the ancient Assyrian peoples. The title of this message today is Assyria, History and Prophecy Coincide. Today, we will examine the history of Assyria from the beginning of empires on this earth and show that there is a pattern with these people of commercial trade, power, and war throughout their history. This pattern of trade, power, and war will repeat as they become the principal leader of the global superpower to come, known in prophecy as the beast. In Mark chapter 13, verse 32 through 33, we read this. But of that day, the day that Jesus Christ will return, remember that Mark chapter 13 corresponds with Matthew 24 and Luke 21, where the disciples had asked Jesus Christ for specific signs and events of his imminent return, and he gave them the answers in these particular chapters. This is one of the descriptions of what would be happening and what we need to be doing just before he returns. Verse 32, but of that day and hour, no one knows. No one knows when he will be returning, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Then he says this to each and every one of the disciples, including us, take heed, watch, and pray, for you do not know when the time is. Verse 35, watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning. In other words, it could be at any time of the day, his imminent return, and we need to be prepared. Then in verse 36, we read, lest, coming suddenly, he find you sleeping. The question is, are we sleeping? Are we watching world events as they unfold to know that possibly Jesus Christ could return at any time? I'd like to refer to the Good News magazine of September-October 2013, this particular issue. And there's an article in this particular Good News magazine that's titled, What is Germany's Destiny? What is Germany's Destiny? And there's a subtitle under this title that reads, Are there historic and prophetic reasons for concern about Germany's overall direction? Historic and prophetic reasons to think about what direction that that particular nation is going. Here's some quotes from that particular article that was written by John Ross Schroeder. This is actually some quotes from leading news sources around the world, news magazines and newspapers. Here's the first one. From the football pitch to politics to the economy, Germany has become Europe's most powerful country. That's a quote from The Economist magazine. Now, sometimes as we're going through our daily activities and we're working and we're going to school and all the things that we face, trials and whatever is going on in our lives, Sometimes we don't focus in on the events that are going on throughout the world, and especially Europe, because we know that Europe is central to Bible prophecy. And this nation is the most powerful country right now in Europe. Here's another quote from the New Statesman. A specter is once again haunting Europe, the specter of German power. From the Financial Times, Berlin's primacy is a reality that cannot be washed away. So this is some of the quotes from leading news sources. But I also have some headlines that's from this particular article as well, from leading newspapers, the headlines that that catch our eyes. Here's one headline, Germany too powerful for Europe. Could Germany spark another war? And also the week that the Fourth Reich began. Again, another quote from this particular Good News magazine article. These headlines reflect a trend that began to come to fore with the onset of the economic recession of 2008. They also reflect history. So these particular quotes and these particular headlines reflect not only what happened after the recession of 2008 that affected not only the United States of America, but countries throughout the world, but it also reflects history. And something that I'd like to give to you this afternoon, which if you've never heard before, is a lesson from history. And that is, one of the lessons of history is that history repeats itself. History does repeat itself. And that's critical when we're dealing with this particular subject today. Here's another quote from that same article. A Germany free from foreign control will seek to restore the united Greater Germany, which Hitler achieved in 1938. Nor will democracy prove an automatic safeguard against a new German aggression. And that's from a British historian who's an authority on German reunification. In other words, even though Germany is a democratic government, elected democratic government, it won't necessarily stop a new aggression that could come about. Here's another quote from an article, a 2008 article in World News and Prophecy, titled Germany's Rising Economic and Political Power. Notice this one. Germany is the world's single biggest exporting nation. Now that was 2008, and that hasn't changed. In the last 100 years, rapid growth in German economic, industrial, and trading power was quickly followed by rising German militarism, which resulted in two world wars. Notice, and I have it highlighted in bold letters there, growth in economic, industrial, and trading power was followed by militarism, which resulted in two world wars. Now, why should these headlines and comments concern us? And that is because Bible prophecy shows a coming world superpower that will be an economic military power, most likely led by a powerful Germany. By examining the history of Assyria, you will see this pattern, the pattern of economic growth, trading power, followed by militarism, has been repeated throughout history. And that's what we will examine today. So are we sleeping, or are we watching events as they march towards Christ's imminent return? These events that the church brings out in our literature are marching towards the return of Jesus Christ. And we can't go to sleep, and we have to be aware of these things as they happen. Again, one of the lessons is that history repeats itself, and that's what I want to impress upon you today. In the book of Revelation, chapter 17, and verses 12 and 13, we read this. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour, a short time in other words, as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. So we see 10 kings here in verse number 12. 10 kings are synonymous with a kingdom or a group of nations. And they will give their power to a powerful, charismatic dictator called the beast. And this power is also described in symbolic terms as Babylon in the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 18, verses 2 and 3. Now the Apostle John, as he was receiving a vision, and this was written down, he saw this vision of Babylon that was falling. In other words, being destroyed. And that's what we read here in verse number 2. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. In other words, a filthy object. Verse number 3. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, of her spiritual fornication, in other words, a religious element to this end-time Babylon, this superpower that will be controlling the world. They have drunk of the wine, spiritually speaking, the spiritual fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, again, spiritual fornication. And notice the last part of verse number 3. And the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. So not only will this be a powerful entity, a religious entity, a military power, but it's also going to be a strong commercial power when it comes on the scene, as the prophecy shows. And the leadership for this European-based power will be a powerful Germany. So let's take a look now at another prophecy in Isaiah chapter 10, verses 5 through 6. Assyria, the rod of God's anger. Excuse me. Verse number 5. Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger. Now this is referring to the nation of Assyria. That would be the agent that God is going to use to punish with. The rod of punishment. The rod of my anger and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. Verse number 6. I will send him against an ungodly nation, referring to the children of Israel, who were rebelling against God, who would not conform to God's commandments, despite the fact that God had sent many prophets to try to get them to change their ways and to follow him. They would not repent. So he calls them an ungodly nation. And continuing on, and against the people of my wrath. And I will give him charge to seize the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. So God was going to use this nation, the nation of Assyria, as the agent of punishment against his people, because his people would not change. And God kept warning the nation of Israel, please, please repent, and then I won't have to send any judgment upon you. But they wouldn't. And so God used the nation of Assyria to be that agent of punishment against his people. Now this is not a knock on the people of Assyria per se, because we know also from Bible prophecy in Isaiah chapter 19, I don't have that written up here on the screen here today, but towards the end of the chapter, Isaiah 19, there's a beautiful prophecy where God calls the children of Israel, or the nation of Israel, Egypt and Assyria, my people. So after the kingdom is set up, when Jesus Christ returns, the Assyrian people are going to be called his people, just like the Israel and Egypt as well. So, but God used that particular nation to punish the nation of Israel. God would use the nation of Assyria as the agent of punishment against the northern tribes of Israel for their rejection of him. Now, this has a dual application to this particular prophecy. It was fulfilled in 722 BC against northern Israel. The powerful nation of Israel, of Assyria, did come against the northern tribes of Israel. They didn't touch Judah yet, but they did come against the northern tribes of Israel as punishment for their disobedience. But there's also a future fulfillment to the modern descendants of Israel. We know from other prophecies in Ezekiel chapter 4 and 5 and also Zechariah chapter 13 that the modern descendants of Israel are going to be punished as well for their rebellion against God. The Bible does show that God has used Gentile nations to punish his people for their sinfulness and rejection of him. So it is important to know who this nation is, the nation of Assyria, because there is a historical pattern with this nation, a historical pattern with the nation of Assyria. That pattern is that it is a trading giant leading to economic power. A trading giant leading to economic power. Then that leads to the rise of militarism. And this pattern has held true from ancient times all the way through to modern history. And that's what I want to impress upon you today. This particular pattern, trading, economic, militarism, goes back to ancient times. And it will also be repeated when the future beast power comes on the scene, according to Bible prophecy. Now let's examine who are the Assyrians of the Bible. Today we're going to examine the historical and prophetic significance of these people. It is important to understand that God will use them again to punish the modern descendants of Israel. They rise from a trading economic power to become a military might. Okay, so who are the Assyrians? Let's go back to Genesis, the book of Genesis. And this is after the flood, after the flood and Noah and his sons begin to repopulate the world. Here we see the line that comes from Shem, one of the three sons of Noah. Genesis 10, verse 22. The sons of Shem, and there were five of them, the sons of Shem were Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. Okay, those are the five sons of Shem. From Asher, the third on the list here, the second on the list, came the Assyrians, the nation of Assyria. Now, the Assyrians of the Bible would eventually, and we'll see this as we go through the rest of this particular seminar today, the Assyrians of the Bible would become the Germans and others of Central Europe. One little side point that I'd like to mention is Abraham came from the third on the list here, Arphaxad. The righteous line of descendants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, came from Arphaxad, who was the third son born to Shem. Now, normally the firstborn would inherit the birthright. You know, back in those ancient times, the birthright had special significance. It meant a whole lot more back in those days than it does today. Oftentimes, the birthright descendant would receive the major portions and be able to select first amongst the lands and the inheritance that the father would give. So it was very, very important at that time. But notice that Abraham and his descendants came from the third on the list, not the first or the second, especially the first that was the birthright. So something happened, and it's not spelled out in the Bible. Something happened with Elam and Asher that they did not receive the birthright promises. Like I said, it's not in the Bible per se, but it could very well be because of their militant tendencies that they did not receive the birthright. That's just for whatever that's worth. Okay, now let's take a look at the connection between the Babylonian-Assyrian religion. Again, back to Genesis chapter 10, verse 22. The five sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. Taking a look at Asher. The Assyrians worshipped Asher as a god. He was also known as Aether. Okay? It was very common back in those ancient times to do ancestor worship, to worship your fathers. And it was something that the ancients did. They looked to their fathers or maybe their grandfathers and they worshipped them, you know, especially the pagans. The god of thunder, you've probably heard this name before, Thor, was derived from this name Aether that Asher was also known as. The Germans of Central Europe would later worship Thor, the god of thunder. Asher means strong or powerful. Here's a quote I have here from the Aid to Bible Understanding. It reads like this. Assyria's religion was largely inherited from Babylon. Although their own national god Asher was viewed as supreme by the Assyrians, Babylon continued to be viewed by them as the chief religious center. So here's a connection between the religion of Assyria and Babylon. The Assyrians continued to worship their forefather Asher as their supreme god, but they also continued to view Babylon as the chief religious center. Very, very important to have this connection between Babylon and Assyrian religions established from the very beginning. And this would continue throughout history. Now let's move on and take a look at the connection between Nimrod and Asher and Babylon and Assyria. Again, Genesis chapter 10, verses 8 through 11. I'm going to be reading this first frame from the New King James Version. Verse number 8. Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. Notice the description and how it's repeated. Verse number 9. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Verse number 10. And the beginning of his kingdom, Nimrod's kingdom, was Babel or Babylon, Erech, Akkad, and Calnar in the land of Shinar. That last phrase, the land of Shinar, is what Babylon was referred to. Shinar is synonymous of Babylon. And there were four cities that he developed in his empire to start with. Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calnar. Then verse number 11, we see, from that land he, referring to Nimrod, went to Assyria and built Nineveh. So that's what the New King James Version tells us. Now, take a look at the Old King James of Genesis chapter 10, verse number 11. It reads, out of that land went forth Asher and builded Nineveh. So what do we have here? Do we have a conflict in Scripture here that one version, the New King James, says that Nimrod built Assyria and Nineveh, but in the Old King James it says that Asher, who was descended from Shem, built Nineveh? Well, actually, neither translation is incorrect. Both translations are correct. The New King James, referring to Nimrod building Nineveh and Assyria, and also the Old King James, referring to Asher building Nineveh. So how could this be possible? Most likely, it was a combined effort between Nimrod and Asher to build Nineveh. Both of them together built that mighty city and the Assyrian nation. Here's a map of the ancient Near East. And if you'll notice on the right side of the map, you see in bold letters in red, Assyria and Babylon. I have you might see that arrow that I just put on the screen. Down below, at the bottom of the arrow, is Babylon. And to the north of that, there's the city of Asher and Nineveh, Assyria. So this is what we're talking about, this particular land, which was also called Mesopotamia, between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. This is where the modern nation of Iraq is today. So this is the area that we're talking about with Babylon and Assyria, where Nimrod and Asher most likely went from Babylon and built Nineveh and the land of Assyria. So there is a connection between Nimrod and Asher. Connection between Babylon and Assyria from the beginning when empires were founded on the earth after the flood. Let's continue on. Let's notice something else here in this connection that we're putting together between Nimrod and Asher and Babylon and Assyria. Genesis chapter 10, verses 8 and 9, to read it again. Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth. I've got that highlighted there on the screen. Verse number 9, he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, where it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. So we see here it's repeated that he was not only a mighty one, but he was a mighty hunter twice in verses 8 and 9. Again, I referred to this earlier, the name Asher means strong or powerful, reflecting back to being mighty one like Nimrod was. Archaeologists have uncovered bas-reliefs. That's That's when they dig and come up with these old reliefs and archaeological finds that they have found buried underground. Archaeologists have uncovered bas reliefs that the Assyrians depicted themselves as the masters of the hunt and military operations. A lot, they referred to themselves as hunters, just like Nimrod did, an association between Babylon and Assyria again. There was an Arab tradition that Asher was a lieutenant of Nimrod in his army. There was also another Arab tradition that Asher built dams over the Tigris River so that Nimrod could move his armies over quickly. There was a Greek historian in, I think, about the 3rd century B.C. that wrote, I'm not sure if that was the exact time, but he wrote about Alexander's conquest, and that when Alexander was conquering the world at that time, he was sending his fleets, ships, down the Tigris River and encountered these dams that had been built by Asher for Nimrod, and he destroyed them because they wouldn't allow his ships to go down the Tigris River. So there was a continued close relationship between Assyria and Babylon throughout their history. And that's a quote from the Aid to Bible Understanding. Now let's take a look. We've seen this association between Assyria and Babylon. Let's take a look at the Assyrian military might. Now we'll go to another prophecy in the book of Nahum. Nahum is a prophecy written, the very first chapter and verse is directed to Nineveh, which was the capital of the Assyrian nation. And it is a prophecy about the Assyrian people and in the capital of Nineveh as well. Here's a description in Nahum chapter 2, verse number 3, of their military might. The shields of his mighty men are made red, red with blood. The valiant men are in scarlet, again referring to blood. The chariots come with flaming torches in the day of his preparation, and the spears are brandished. Notice that particular description of flaming torches. This could be, very well have been a vision that Nahum had of off into the future of tanks and the flame floors and that kind of thing that are used in today in modern military warfare. At the bottom of this particular frame, notice that I have written, it was the custom of the Assyrians to roll their garments in blood before a battle to strike terror on the enemy. So in other words, their war garments and their shields and stuff, they'd have it blood red, so that when they came against their enemy, the enemy would go, whoa, these guys are terrible. You know, it'd strike terror in their enemies. Verse number 4, Nahum 2. The chariots rage in the streets. They jostle one another in the broad roads. They seem like torches. Again, another description that could fit military hardware today. They run like lightning. You know, a tank can go 45, 50 miles an hour, some of them. The Assyrians were the first to use the chariot as a war machine in ancient times. They were skilled in the art of the weapons of war, and they have been throughout the ages. Flashback to World War II in the short time that the Germans built up their military might, the Air Force, the Luftwaffe that they had, and the tanks, that with some of them that destroyed the Allied tanks like they were nothing. Here's another quote from the Aid to Bible Understanding. Assyria was essentially a military power, and the historical picture left of its exploits is one of cruelty and rapaciousness. Unfortunately, they were very cruel to their prisoners. Sometimes they would lead them back with rings around their noses and then chains pulling the rings as they led them to as prisoners. There's all kinds of description. You can go into commentaries that talks about what they did to some of their prisoners, and it wasn't very pretty. Here's a prophecy relating to the future and the military might that will be leading the king of the north. You're familiar with Daniel chapter 11, verse 40 through 41. And at the time of the end, the king of the south, the king south of Jerusalem, shall attack him, referring to the king of the north. And the king of the north, north of Jerusalem, again, a European-based superpower, The king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. He shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. So this is a prophecy talking about the time of the end, just before Jesus Christ returns. The king of the south pushing against the king of the north, most likely some kind of Muslim entity to the south of Jerusalem that attacks the king of the north, a European-based power in some way. And the king of the north retaliates and puts those countries down in a hurry. So, again, this is a description of the Assyrian military might they've had down throughout history. Now let's take a look at Assyria as they are related as an economic and trading powerhouse. Not only have they been a military might throughout their history, but they've also been an economic and trading powerhouse, going all the way back to ancient times. That's what I want to show you next. Here's from a book titled An Encyclopedia of World History. This was concerning the date approximately 1920 to 1850 B.C., in other words, 2,000 years before the time of Jesus Christ, 1920 to 1850 B.C. Here's the quote. Under native rulers, Assyrian merchants established a prosperous colony in Cappadocia. This was about the time that Abraham moves to Canaan in the 1900s. Remember Genesis chapter 12, I have it up here on the screen, when God told Abraham to get out of your country, get away from your family to a land that I will show you, and then you will be blessed if you do this. Yeah, of course, he was going to the promised land. About the time that Abraham's leaving Ur of the Chaldees in Genesis chapter 12 is when the Assyrian nation had this prosperous colony of merchants in an area called Cappadocia. Here's from an encyclopedia of ancient civilizations talking about the Assyrian period of 2000 BC and coming forward. Here's the quote. A profitable trade in copper was carried on during this time in Anatolia. And this was done through a large merchant colony established in eastern Anatolia, in Cappadocia, in a city called Kanish. Again, another reference showing that the Assyrian nation, back in those ancient times, about the time of Abraham, was a trading merchant power. A great many of the records of this flourishing colony of Assyrian merchants have been discovered. Here's a map of the ancient Near East. Again, I have an arrow on the screen refer to on the right side where Assyria and Nineveh is, where we looked before. Another arrow that I have on there for you. Hope you can see that. From the land of Assyria, over here on the right, Assyria and Nineveh. Way over here, Anatolia, on the left side of the screen, is that area where they had this merchant colony. Cappadocia in the city of Kanish was approximately in this area by that little lake right there. So if we're talking about this area, a distance from Assyria was where they had this huge trading colony, this merchant colony established. Again, about the time that Abraham was moving to the promised land. Another frame I have here. Cappadocia was famous for its mineral resources, especially copper and iron. The Assyrians needed these minerals, especially iron, to make their weapons. Haran in Genesis chapter 12 was a stopping point that Abraham made on his way to the promised land. Haran is mentioned in the Cappadocian tablets because it was a famous trade route. Another quote from a book called Archaeology in the Old Testament by Merrill Unger. He writes about a dynasty of Akkadian princes of Asher which founded colonies in West Asia Minor, which I showed you previously on the map. And he writes this. From the descendants of these colonists have come the Cappadocian tablets, 1920 to 1870 BC, which consist of several thousand business documents and letters written in Old Assyrian and forming part of the commercial archives of the Assyrian merchant colony at Kanish in eastern Asia Minor. 13 of the Cappadocian tablets have been discovered at Elasar. So again, I'm giving you references to show what this power was back in those ancient times, Assyria as a merchant colony. Notice this last reference to discovered at Alasar. That's very important because that last part of that word, Isar, has reference to Asher, as we'll see here in a moment. This city was named after Asher. One more quote I have here from the Aid to Bible Understanding. It says, a trade route to the Mediterranean and to Asia Minor ran along the northern part of Assyria. Much of Assyria's warring was in order to gain or maintain control of such trade routes. So a lot of the warring that they did had to do with maintaining these merchant colonies that they had. Okay, now let's put this together. And let's take a look how this trading economic power in ancient times led to war. And this would be repeated throughout history. Genesis chapter 14, verses 1 through 2. Excuse me. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar. Remember, Shinar refers to Babylonia. Erech, king of Elasar, that goes back to that city of Elasar and Cappadocia where the merchant colony was. And Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and these other kings that are listed here in the last part of verse number 2. This word war in verse number 2 is the first time the word war was used in the Bible. First time that the word war was used in the Bible. Barnes' note says this: many generations back, the first world power consisting of four cities was established by Nimrod in the land of Shinar. We read that earlier. This has now given way to a world confederacy consisting of four kings. So we read about the four cities that Nimrod had built, probably combined with Asher, back in Genesis chapter 10. Now we see four more kings, a world ruling power that has come on the scene. You might say here that we have a huge Babylonian-Assyrian confederacy here. And this will be repeated in history and at the end time as well. A Babylonian-Assyrian confederacy. We see an empire built upon trade that we've been going through in these various scenarios here. An empire built upon trade, followed by verse 2, war, the first time that it was used in the Bible. Let's examine now who these kings were here in Genesis chapter 4, verse number 1. Josephus wrote that this was an Assyrian confederation described here. Josephus was a Jewish historian that wrote about the time of Christ. And he said that this was an Assyrian confederation described here way back in Genesis chapter 14, verse number 1, at the time of Abraham. Okay, Amraphel, the king of Shinar. Barnes' note says that Amraphel is king of Shinar, or Babylonia. He is therefore the successor of Nimrod and the sovereign of the most ancient kingdom, and on these grounds is to be placed first on the list. The king of Shinar, Babylonia, Amraphel. The second one, Erech, king of Elasar. The last part of the name Elasar, A-S-A-R, means city of Asar, or Asher, an Assyrian king from 1938 to 35 B.C. Remember again, and I referred to this earlier, that Elasar was found in Cappadocia, where their huge merchant colony was located. The third king on this list, Chedorlaomer of Elam. Elam was Asher's brother. Remember in that list that we read earlier? Elam was Asher's brother, who was apparently disqualified from the righteous line. Elam was the father of the Persians. In the book of Daniel, the Persian Empire would be one of the third great world-ruling empire to come upon the scene that would destroy the Babylonian Empire. So this king was obviously a powerful king. The fourth one on the list, Tidal, king of nations. Tidal, the name is Indo-Germanic. He also probably came from the area of Anatolia, where this huge merchant colony was established by the Assyrians. So that gives you the background of these particular four huge kings. That was an Assyrian-Babylonian confederation, one of the first world-ruling confederations on the world. As you go further into chapter 14, we'll see that Abraham came against these four kings and defeated them. We won't get into that today. But right from the beginning of history, we see these four kings, these powerful kings, and they were defeated by Abraham. You can find that in verse number 15. And then when this happens, when Abraham defeats this confederation of Assyrian-Babylonian confederation, the Assyrian Empire disappears for almost 1,000 years. It was still around as an Assyrian nation, but it wasn't powerful anymore after Abraham defeated them. You fast forward for about 1,000 years in history to somewhere around 1100 BC, and the Assyrian Empire rises again. This is the empire that's eventually going to be used by God to destroy the northern tribes of Israel. And again, let's notice the pattern. The Neo-Assyrian Empire, this is the empire that that God used to destroy the Israelites, the northern tribes. The Neo-Assyrian Empire was built on trade and tribute from other nations. This is well known in historical sources and commentaries. Assyria sought a stranglehold on all trade routes in Western Asia, just like their ancestors had done during the time of Abraham. The Assyrians took control of Phoenician seaports. The Phoenicians, the nations of the city of Tyre, which is very famous in Bible history and prophecy, powerful nation, Tyre and Sidon, the Phoenicians, they took control of their seaports. And the Phoenicians used to bring materials from Tarshish, which was in Spain, famous for tin and iron, which was useful for the Assyrians for their weapons of war. Here's what Eugene Merrill says from the book A History of Old Testament Israel, referring to about the 800s BC, about 100 years before the Assyrians would destroy the Israelites, the northern tribes. He says this: "The Assyrian imperial policy of this period was one largely motivated by economic and commercial interests." Notice how this is repeated. Back in 1,000 years earlier, that mighty confederacy that came on the scene was a powerful trading unit. The ones that destroyed the Israelites, the northern tribes, were also based on trade, largely motivated by economic and commercial interests. In the book Babylon by Joan Oates, she writes about Tiglath-Pileser I, king of Assyria, 1114 to 1076, and she says, "This particular king extended Assyrian territory further than ever before. His military campaigns are recorded in the extraordinary bloodthirsty style that was to become the Assyrian custom." And of course, that held true throughout history, even in our time, modern times. Lions and wild bulls were also hunted. Again, going back to the description of Nimrod and Asher being hunters, mighty hunters, with the bow or the king's own iron spear. The first written documentation of the ritual royal hunt attested everywhere in Western Asia at this time, which can be traced back to the very dawn of Sumerian or Babylonian Assyrian history. Again, this repeating of them being hunters, mighty hunters. Merrill, in his book of Old Testament history, says this: "It was Shalmaneser, in the years 858 to 824, who first made it clear that Assyria's objective was to extend her hegemony over the entire Western world." In other words, to rule the whole Western world at that time. He also says, "It is clear that the eyes of the world, including Aram and Palestine, were riveted on one nation, mighty Assyria." Assyria was, at this time, and would continue for almost 200 years, to be the major power of the Near Eastern world. So again, I wanted to impress upon you that this was repeated in their history. Again, economic power, military power, ruling that part of the world. Now, let's flash forward to the year 729 BC. This is 7 years before Assyria would destroy the northern tribes of Israel. I want to show you the religious aspect that was going on at that particular time with Assyria and Babylon. Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, took the hand of Marduk. That means he embraced Marduk. Marduk was the national god of the Babylonians. Took the hand of Marduk, the god of the Babylonians, during the New Year ceremony at the time of the winter solstice. What's the winter solstice? Well, that's when the sun's at its lowest point and the shortest day of the year, which the world celebrates with Christmas Day, December 25th. Back in those days, it wasn't known as Christmas. It was known as the New Year celebration. And at that time of the winter solstice, the ancient pagans would begin to light bonfires to try to get the sun to come back up, because, you know, it was the shortest day of the year. So they would light fires to the gods to try to get the sun to come back up at the time of the winter solstice. This ceremony and the festivities that were going on, which were pagan rites, and there was a lot of things going on at that time. We won't even get into that. But anyways, this lasted for about a week, including what the Romans developed as the New Year celebration on their calendar. This is how the pagans celebrated that time of the year. But anyways, the king of Assyria embraced the god of the Babylonians. And when he did this, he effectively inaugurated an Assyrian-Babylonian dual monarchy and became the king over both nations. So what I'm saying here, in 729 BC, the king of Assyria also became the king of Babylon. 7 years before Assyria destroyed the northern tribes of Israel in 722 BC. So when God sent the Assyrian nation against the northern tribes of Israel, the king of Assyria was also the king of Babylon when they were destroyed. Now think about that as that relates to the coming beast power in the future. This will be repeated again in the future with a combined Assyrian-Babylonian-European-based power known as the beast in Revelation. Another little interesting side light, I don't have this up on the screen here today, but Charlemagne, who was what we consider to be one of the resurrections of the Roman Empire, in 800 BC, when he was crowned Holy Roman Emperor, it was done on Christmas Day by the Pope. On Christmas Day. Just like it had been, this king of Assyria had been, took the hand of Marduk, the god of the Babylonians, during the New Year's ceremony at the time of the winter solstice. Now, will that be repeated in the future? That remains to be seen. 722 BC, God used the Assyrians to punish the nation of Israel for their disobedience, as we saw in Isaiah chapter 10, verses 5 through 6. And again, this was an Assyrian-Babylonian confederacy, the ruler over both. Now, I should explain, this was kind of a love-hate relationship. The Babylonians didn't really love it that the king of Assyria had become their king, but they couldn't do anything about it because Assyria was so powerful. And that kind of reflects on what's going to happen in the future, kind of the love-hate relationship between the beast power and all the things that are going on with the other nations associated with them. Okay, back again to the prophecy, Isaiah chapter 10, verses 5 through 7. Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I will send him against an ungodly nation. This king of Babylon, the king of Assyria, who's also the king of Babylon, is going to go against the Israelites and against the people of my wrath, because God was angry with them. And I will give him charge to seize the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. The mire of the streets. Verse 7, yet he does not mean so, nor does his heart think so. In other words, it wasn't something that he initially had planned to do, but it is in his heart to destroy, to cut off not a few nations, because it was God's will to use them in that particular manner. And again, in other prophecies, in Ezekiel chapter 4 and 5, and also Zechariah chapter 13, there's prophecies that this is going to happen again in the future to the modern descendants of Israel. And again, you can find that in our United States and Britain and Bible prophecy booklet. It's explained. So we see that ancient Israel was defeated and taken captive. Then what happened to Israel when they were defeated by this this king of Assyria, who is also the king of Babylon. 2 Kings chapter 15, verses 17 through 19. In the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Menahem, the son of Gadai, became king over Israel and reigned 10 years in Samaria. So we see another king became king over Israel and reigned in the capital of Samaria. Verse 18, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin. This is the reason why God brought the punishment upon them. They did evil in God's sight. Then we see in 2 Kings chapter 15 through 19, Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land. God allowed them, just as we see the prophecy here in chapter 10, verse 5, he allowed the king of Assyria to come against the northern tribes to punish them because of their disobedience. Then in 2 Kings 17, verse 18, the description here of why God removed the northern tribes. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel, removed them from his sight, and there was none left but the tribe of Judah alone. The nation of Assyria did not attack the northern tribes. They would later on make an attempt against Judah, but this would happen several years later. And they fully didn't take the nation of Judah. They got to the gates of Jerusalem, and God didn't allow them to go any farther. But the northern tribes of Israel were taken away as prisoners, and only Judah was left. There was no Israelites left in the land at all. Verse 23 of 2 Kings 17. Until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he said by all his servants the prophets. So Israel was carried away from their own land to Assyria, as it is to this day. Another map I have for you here. If you look on the lower part of the screen here, the land of Canaan, the promised land where Jerusalem and Judah and northern Israel was located. They were taken from Canaan to the land of Assyria up here in the north. Here's Nineveh, Mesopotamia, the land between the Tigris and the Euphrates River. They were taken to their land. Only Judah was left, taken to Assyria. Then later on, the Israelites, after they, for several hundred years, they were virtual prisoners to the Assyrians and most likely the Babylonians after that. But most likely when the Persians defeated Babylon, these Israelites gained their freedom. And what would happen through history, and that's explained in our booklet, United States and Britain and Bible Prophecy, made their way through the Caucasus Mountains here between the Caspian and the Black Sea, to the north of the Black Sea, and eventually towards Europe. That's where the tribes of Israel would head to. Okay, so that's what happened to the Israelites. I know all of you are familiar with that particular scenario. But what happened to Assyria then? What happened to Assyria? Well, the Assyrians were defeated by Babylon in 612 B.C., Remember, it was about 722 B.C. that the Assyrians defeated the northern tribes of Israel. So approximately 100 years later, Babylon rose to be a great power and defeated mighty Assyria. The remnants of the Assyrian army, which were almost destroyed, but not completely, gathered themselves together. They got together with the Egyptians and tried to take on the Babylonians again. In a huge battle, in 605 B.C., the remnants, what was left over of the Assyrian army, joined the Egyptians together with their forces, and they were defeated by Babylon. And according to Joan Oates, Babylon's victory was decisive. And in the struggle, she says, Assyria disappeared without a trace, according to history as she was relating it. It seemed that the Assyrians disappeared after this battle. So what happened to Assyria? Where did they go? Finding Assyria. In the first century, this is about the time of, this is after Jesus Christ in the apostle, time of the apostles in the New Testament church, the first century A.D., the Roman historian Pliny located the Assyrians north of the Black Sea. And I have another map that I'll get to here in a moment, which is where the Israelites had headed to after they were released from their captivity. In Smith's Classical Dictionary, under the heading titled Germania, we read, "There can be no doubt that they," referring to the Assyrians, "migrated into Europe from the Caucasus and the countries around the Black and Caspian Seas." So remember this, and we'll get to a map here in a moment. The Black Sea and the Caspian Seas is where they were found. Around 300 A.D., so this is 300 years, you know, after the time of let's say, Jesus Christ and the apostles, the 300 A.D., Jerome, who was a Catholic writer, wrote in the book Post-Nicene Catholic Fathers, that Asher is joined with the tribes invading Western Europe along the Rhine. So around the year 300, Jerome wrote that the tribes of Asher was invading Western Europe along the Rhine River. Here's the map that I have for you. And again, way down here, in this area here, is Canaan, the land of the Promised Land. Here's the land of Mesopotamia, where the Assyrians were located. Here's the Caucasus Mountains and the Black and Caspian Seas. This is where the Israelites migrated to, made their way to Europe, and eventually would go into Britain and Ireland and eventually on to the United States of America. We saw in the previous frames that the Assyrians were located in between the Black and the Caspian Seas, and as we said earlier, that Rome, around 300 A.D., located them around the Rhine River, invading Western Europe. So the Assyrians would go into West Central Europe and the areas of Germany, Austria, such as that. Essentially, they followed the Israelites into Europe. That's where the Assyrians were located and stayed and built up the German nation. Now let's flash forward in history some more. Let's go to the time of, in our century, World War II. Germany developed an economic power, which was followed by militarism. After World War I, Germany and the nations of Europe were in bad shape. They were, you know, war had devastated most of those nations. Economically, they were in ruins. And Adolf Hitler took Germany in a short span of less than 10 years, built them into an economic power, an industry where they were cranking out the war machine that eventually they tried to take over most of the world. Back to that quote from World News and Prophecy. In the last 100 years, rapid growth in German economic, industrial, and trading power was quickly followed by rising German militarism, which resulted in two world wars. What does that reflect back to? Back to the ancient times of the Assyrian nation, the time of Abraham. Back to the Neo-Assyrian Empire that was the major power in the Mideast that destroyed the northern tribes. Economic power followed by military. Same thing that's going to be a keynote of the beast power that's going to come according to the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 18, verses 9 through 19, the prophecy of the beast power, the Assyrio-Babylonian Empire, again, built through economics and trade. And trade and economics will be the centerpiece of this empire, combined with a religious aspect, spiritual fornication. Revelation chapter 18, verses 9 through 11. The kings of the earth who committed fornication, spiritual fornication, and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. This is the vision that John had of Babylon burning and all the nations of the earth crying and moaning because they're losing out on the riches that they had when Babylon burns. Verse number 10, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, the great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour, or in a short time, your judgment has come." Of course, we know that Jesus Christ is going to return and the nations, the beast power is going to fight against him. Their judgment will come and Babylon will burn. Verse number 11, and the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. So many nations of the earth are going to be living high on the hog, we could, to use an expression here in Arkansas, because of this empire that's going to be built, this Babylon of the future. History and Bible history has shown from the dawn of world-ruling empires going back to ancient times after the flood that Babylon and Assyria have combined forces and will do so again in the future. Passages from Daniel and Revelation show that this will be fulfilled in a new superpower based in Europe called in prophetic language, the Beast. Both history and in the Bible, with current events, events that are happening right now in our day and time, show that that the nation that will lead this power will be Germany. And again, this reflects back to the article from the Good News, the latest issue. While a European superpower emerges, the power of the United States diminishes. That's happening in our day and time. We read about it in our daily news and we see it. And it's been happening in the last 10 years in the history of the United States. The modern descendants of Israel are going to receive curses for their disobedience, just like the ancient tribes of Israel did as well. Leviticus chapter 26, verse 19. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28 are the blessings and cursings chapter. Blessings for obedience to God, cursings for disobedience. Verse number 19, God says, I will break the pride of your power. That has been happening in the last 10 years in the history of the United States. Start out at the beginning of this century, the year 2000, what happened? Well, one of the events that happened was our country turned over the Panama Canal to the nation of Panama after we had built it and owned it for many, many years, decades. The Panama Canal controls the trade routes between the Pacific and the Atlantic, between the West and the East, which we had control of that major sea gate for many decades. We turned that over to the Panamanians. That, you could say, was kind of the beginning of losing part of our power, one of the major sea gates. Also during this time, you know, a year later, 2001, what happened? The attacks against the Twin Towers in New York City and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. What did that lead to? Some major wars where we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, which has led to a huge, huge debt upon this country. I don't even have to mention that to you, the trillions of dollars in debt, which is leading to disaster, breaking the pride of our power. We went from having extra money in the bank account, the federal bank account, to a debtor nation in the period of about 10 years. God says, I will break the pride of your power for disobedience. Another one of the curses for Israel's disobedience, Deuteronomy chapter 28 this time, verse 25, and you shall become troublesome to the kingdoms of the earth. That's happening right now. That's been happening in this last year when you look at current events. The debt crisis that's been happening. You know, when we hear about this, it almost becomes over and over again, repetitious, and it kind of sometimes can kind of go through one ear and out the other, and you almost want to ignore it and let it have it go away. And yet, this has an impact on other nations throughout the earth. Other nations are every time the debt crisis rolls around, and the U.S. threatens to shut their government down, which it did here recently. The nations of the earth, the other ones, other economies are sweating it out. What's going to happen with the United States? It's troublesome. If the United States crashes, it's going to affect a ripple effect throughout the world. Troublesome when the debt crisis that is ongoing and another government shutdown. Sometime in January is going to be the next time where our government has to face this again. What's going to happen? Each time, it becomes troublesome to other nations of the earth. The debacle in the Middle East with Syria and Egypt and the things that have been going on. Do we invade? Do we bomb them or not? The pride in our power going away. Troublesome to other nations of the earth as they look and say, what is the United States doing? Which direction are they going in? Are they the nation to really lead the world as a superpower? Lately here in the news, the European leaders outraged over the telephone spying. That's been in the last couple of weeks. The spying of the German leader, Angela Merkel, and of the other leaders of Europe has come to the fore in the news, and the Europeans are outraged over this. Now, let's face the fact, there's been spying going on throughout history. And this nation spies on that one, the other one spies. The spies have been around in history. But this has the Europeans very outraged at what has been going on. From a Reuters article, I have this particular quote, that this telephone spying has triggered outrage and shattered European trust in Washington. One news reporter said this last week that a leading European leader warned of the European companies not to put their trust in the United States anymore, not to trust their data with the United States anymore. Now think about that for a moment. Not to trust the United States of America. Don't trust your data companies with the United States. That's pitiful. That's losing the pride of our power. That's becoming troublesome to the nations of the earth. There's also a talk of a de-Americanization of the world. America's losing its grip on its power. It's losing its teeth. We can't trust them economically anymore. They're in super debt. We can't trust them either because of the scandals that have been going on. Meanwhile, there's a German plan to reform NATO and to have more power within NATO. That says a lot right there. Isaiah chapter 10, which we've read previously, Assyria being used as the staff in God's hand of indignation against his people, and that he will send them against an ungodly nation, the modern descendants of Israel, because of their disobedience. So as we conclude this particular message today, what's the admonition for all of us? We've seen how we need to take note not to be sleeping as these current events unfold. That there's been a repetition throughout history, going back to ancient times, of an economic power that develops into a military power that eventually God uses against the people, his descendants, his people, because of their disobedience. And combined also with the Revelation scriptures that we've read of this coming superpower, the beast power. Luke chapter 21, verse 36. Here's the admonition for all of us. Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. We don't want to be caught sleeping. We have to be watching current events, and we have to be taking care of ourselves, spiritually speaking, as well. That's what I want to leave you with here this afternoon. Let's keep focused on strengthening our spiritual lives and making the needed changes in our personal lives, living and walking with God, to be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass. History does repeat itself. There is a coming superpower that's going to be ruling this earth just before Jesus Christ returns. Let's not be caught sleeping.